People First Radio is a program about people, the society in which we live, and issues related to health and wellness.
Welcome to People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh. High school students across Canada have spent their entire lives in the age of the smartphone. Someone who was entering grade 9 around the time ChatGPT launched in late 2022 would be on track to have just graduated. Lately, more and more governments across the world, including Canada's, have taken an interest in regulating how young people can use social media. Amidst all of this, a think tank out of Toronto Metropolitan University is bringing Canadian youth together to lead conversations about digital wellness. The DAIS is the name of that think tank. It's interested in the intersection between technology, education, and democracy. Its Youth Champions program works with students to understand how tech design impacts attention, behavior, and mental health. From there, the champions are trained to lead conversations on the subject with their peers back home. Today on the program, we'll hear from some of the DAIS's youth champions about what it's been like growing up in the digital age.
Hi, my name is Isis, and I just finished grade 11. I will be going into grade 12 in the fall, and I am in Moncton, New Brunswick right now.
Okay, hi everyone. My name is Princess Akinzua. I like to introduce myself as kind of like a youth representative, someone who is really inspired by youth and someone who really is an activist and someone who loves to activate for youths. I'm from Winnipeg, Manitoba. I'm currently going into grade 11, and yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Well, Princess Isis, thank you very much for being here virtually from across the country. Maybe if we're starting this conversation on youth, technology, health, digital wellness, could you maybe each give me a sense of just what role do phones play in your lives and maybe the lives of like people in your classes? Maybe starting on the East Coast with Isis.
I would say that cell phones definitely do play a really major role. I think that it definitely depends on who you're talking to. For some people, it plays a bigger role in communication, right? So ensuring that they can talk to their friends, ensuring that they're in contact with their families. But for others, it can also play a very big role with knowledge and just like ensuring that they have access to social media, ensuring that they know what's going on in the world and that they're up to date with everything. But at the same time, it can play a role with entertainment. You know, there's a very big role that social media has with music and videos and even just opinions, especially. And from opinions, it can really branch out into like politics, religion, and even just like going through different mindsets that people may have and different ideologies.
So you mentioned that you're just wrapping up grade 11. Are we at the point where it just like everyone in the class pretty much has a cell phone?
Yes, definitely. Some people have more than one cell phone. So,
and how about for you, Princess?
Well, yeah, 100%. I agree with Isis. I think phones play a much bigger role in our lives than many adults realize. For a lot of young people today, like Isis said, phones are not just devices for entertainment. They're like tools we use for communication, learning, organization, creativity, and like staying connected to the world around. Everything now is online and everything now is digital. So many students use their phones to check assignments, communicate with classmates about schoolwork, manage your time, schedule access to educational resources, and stay in touch with family and friends. So for some students, especially those involved in extracurricular activities, sport leadership groups, and everything, phones are really essential part of their lives. And yeah, coming from someone who was going to grade 11 and is a high schooler and is really like involved in school, I get to talk to a lot of like high schoolers, a lot of teens. And yeah, the impact on phones in our generation is really huge.
So how does it interact with the class part? Are you using your phones to do schoolwork? Are there bans in your schools on being able to use phones? What is that like?
Okay, so school technology policies are like usually designed to improve focus, reduce distractions, and create positive learning environments. So, like I mentioned, everything now is digital, and I think schools are trying to keep up with the trends. Schools are trying to make like you have to move with the trends, kind of improve with it. So everything now is digitalized. You have your laptop, you have your phone. I think like the most effective policies right now are the ones that recognize both the benefits and challenges of technology. A lot of people just like to focus more on like the downside of technology, more on like the downside of how your laptop distracts you in classes. Very much now the dynamic at my school, I would say, is everything is digital. You have teachers teaching, everyone has a laptop open. You have people doing things on Teams, people doing things on like Google Classroom. So we are physically together in the same class, but we're physically not learning together because everyone has a different screen. And it can also be used for different mechanisms because people have different ways of learning. And technology has been used at my school to feed these needs, but it also has a really downside. So we are at the point where we're starting to realize, is the downside better than the good side? Is it a balance? And yeah.
So what are the, you mentioned there, like the pros of technology, the downsides. What are the downsides?
Oh, the downsides for technology on my part, I would definitely say, is artificial intelligence. I believe that our generation is like, we're becoming less literate. There's a decline in literacy in our generation, mostly because of the introduction of artificial intelligence. If we get an English assignment, like write an essay, write a 300-word essay, it's really easy for you to type the prompt into ChatGPT, and then it's gonna bring out this amazing essay, and then it's gonna hand it into the teachers, and the teachers, they look at it and go, this is definitely not one of my student roots. But the thing that surprises me is that the techniques they use to check to find if a student's work is AI. So we're using AI to check AI. And I find it really discouraging as someone who likes to read, as someone who has a really large intellectual appetite. It becomes really discouraging because sometimes you submit assignments, sometimes you submit homeworks, and teachers are like, there's no way you wrote that. There's no way you're that smart to be able to construct something that good, or construct something that seems that perfect. And then you have to try and bargain and explain to them, like, oh, I did write this. And then you have to go through this entire process. And it's really hard on students who actually like learning and students who actually want to increase their vocabulary. For example, someone like me, if I want to write an essay, I go on Google and I'm like, oh, can you give me a synonym of this word? Can you give me a synonym of that word? And then I just type it all out into the essay. And then the teacher's like, you did not write this. And then you have to go back and forth with your teacher being, oh, I did write this, or I didn't write this. So the teacher are at a point where they cannot determine if a student is using AI or they're not using AI because certain teachers they don't know how to use these things to be able to determine if this is AI and if it's not AI. And again, with the policies, we don't know what to do. So everyone just goes, oh, your work is AI, your work is AI, your work is AI. And like, as for creatives, a lot of people with creative minds, it's reached a really what's the word? I want to say downslide, but that's not the word. It's reached a certain part because you cannot form creative ideas. It seems really crazy to people when you say something. Or when the other day I was talking to someone and I said something like mechanism, and we're like, okay, Albert Einstein. It's really discouraging that when you use certain words, people are like, wow, ChatGPT, wow. That I feel like personally in this generation, if someone calls you smart, you're really not smart because based on like the comparison of like the older generations, you're kind of like just average because I think I saw was it a thing where they did a thing to say that Gen Zs are like the fourth generation to be dumber than the last generation. So technically we are dumber than our parent generation. And the things they scores on keep reusing. They try to keep making everything easier with the room for AI, with the room for ChatGPT and everything else. And from a student perspective, you just sit back and you're just like, what are we doing? Like, what are we doing? Everyone is trying to, yeah, ChatGPT has its pros and cons, like I mentioned. Like, for example, if you're stuck in a math question and you don't understand a math question, you just go into ChatGPT and be like, la 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 la, could you explain this math question to me like I'm in grade two? And then it breaks it down really simply. ChatGPT is a tool. The entire purpose of learning is for you to be able to utilize tools to fit every specific child's needs. And so sometimes I go to ChatGPT and I'm like, oh, I don't understand this biology question. Could you explain this? Could you explain this if I was a grade two student. Well, could you break this down easier? And then it breaks it down into specific concept that, oh, now I get what my teacher was trying to say, and then I get it. The problem is students have access to ChatGPT. ChatGPT is so mainstream, but they don't know how to use it. People, they just go type it into Google, write an essay with me for 500 words, and half the time they don't know what the essay is talking about. They don't know what the grammar, and like 50% of the time, the essay that ChatGPT writes is not your work. It's like something, it's just like a collection of different people's essay. So it's gonna take 2 lines from Isis' essay, take 2 lines from my essay, take 2 lines from your essay, and then mix it all together to make it sound like my thoughts.
It's really interesting to hear your experience of how this has impacted you. I guess when these kind of generative AIs were becoming kind of consumer-facing technologies that anyone could use, that was probably around the time you were both entering high school. So I guess that's been there with you evolving for these last few years. It's interesting to hear you talk about how, even if you're not using them, you have to, and you write something that is pretty good that the teacher might even think that, no, was that AI? So interesting to hear how this might be causing issues, even if you're not using it. He says, does that kind of vibe with your experience?
Yes, 100%. In my school, there's been cases of the teachers using AI to grade assignments, and especially for giving feedback. So I remember there was one situation where our English teacher, actually a little bit ironic, but he was using AI to mark assignments, and one student went up to him and asked him what a word meant, and he didn't know the answer to it. So it's really kind of interesting how, it can kind of apply to both people, but honestly, I feel like Prince has kind of really summed everything pretty well, and especially with the use of AI in schools, I think that it really has a lot to do with how easy it is for students to have access to it. Because when you're learning something new, especially when you're in the high school level, materials be they become way more difficult, and so students they can go through two processes. They can either go through the discomfort and actually try to understand the material. Or if they have a tool that's going to make it easier, they can use that tool. The only issue is that some people will use the tool to actually help them understand, whereas other people will just use the tool to do it for them. And I think that that's really where the major issue with AI happens. And the big problem with it is that you can't really decide who is going to use it for which specific situation. And it also kind of plays a pretty major role in our mental health as well. In school, with teachers marking your assignments with AI and even students using AI, not only, like Princess said, do your literacy rates go down, but also people aren't really used to being bored anymore. They aren't really okay with being in that discomfort zone where growth actually happens, and so growth isn't happening anymore. And especially with things like their relationships, students, sometimes when you're trying to talk to somebody new, it might be a little bit uncomfortable at first. And so you're like, some people might go and actually go through that discomfort, but some people might not. And so that's kind of where these like major issues and problems that we're seeing in society arise. It's really from the fact that people aren't really comfortable in being uncomfortable anymore. And AI is just making it that much easier to go through your life not having to face anything that might take you outside of your comfort zone.
This is People First Radio. On today's program, we're hearing from Isis Constantino and Princess Akenzua. The pair are high school students from Moncton and Winnipeg, respectively. They're taking part in the Youth Champions program at The Dais, a think tank at Toronto Metropolitan University. That program sees youth leading conversations about digital wellness and healthy tech habits in their home communities. We're talking on the program today about their experiences going through high school alongside smartphones, social media, and generative AI. Whether it's specifically to do with AI or just like phone policies in general, do you feel like we're kind of in like a Wild West scenario, or do you feel like there are clear rules? Does it kind of vary from one class to the next? Yeah, where do you think we are in that phase? Do you feel like you're sort of on the front lines as students of this new thing as we're all collectively figuring out what to do with it?
Honestly, yes, a little bit. I think that we're really, as a society, we're really in that stage of trial and error, right? So this kind of the way that things are right now with so much technology and the way that technology is advancing so much, we've never really seen this before as a whole community. And so I think nobody really knows what we should be doing right now, right? Some people say that we should be investing more in technology to make it even better. Whereas other people say that we should start cutting back and go back to previous times, whereas we didn't have as much technology. And there obviously are pros and cons for both options, but it's just we don't really know what the right answer is. And especially in things like classrooms, the teachers actually play a much bigger role than I think they believe they do. Because some teachers, they are very chill with their policies. They say that as long as you get your work in on time, you're good, there's no problem. Other teachers are a little bit more strict and they just want you to not have your phones in class. But some teachers are actually more judgmental than they are helpful. So some teachers, the moment that you walk into class, they already assume that you are completely addicted to your cell phone. And they do so in more of a mocking manner than a manner of like trying to show you, maybe guide you on how to fix it. I have one teacher, for example. Or I had a teacher for my math class, and whenever somebody even just like checked the clock or something, she would always assume like, oh my gosh, your generation, you guys don't know how to be bored anymore. You guys are doing this, you're doing that. And who knows, maybe the student was just looking around the room. And I think that the teachers, they kind of really play a much bigger role in this, especially in the policies, because when students try to mock the students will feel attacked. And so the natural response for them to try to defend themselves. And by defending themselves, they will go against these policies, even if the cell phone policies are meant to help them. So it's really a situation that needs a little bit of compromise from both groups, but it's really difficult to get that, especially again, because we haven't seen this before, but also because our generation grew up in a bit of a different era than the previous generations. And so what we find today to be normal for them might be abnormal. And so they aren't really that keen on trying to like understand what we're going through. And we aren't that keen to try to understand what they think is best for us. So it just creates a lot of friction.
Okay, so Isaac made mention of something of like the older generation being quite a bit judgmental towards students being like addicted to their phones, addicted to social media and everything. And that just kind of made me think everything and anything is has AI. Everything kind of has this connection to AI. And literally you search on Google and the first thing you see is this AI overview. You go to Canva, you have like this AI option to like creating a poster with AI. So students, I like to believe that a good population of students are trying their best to like cut back on AI, trying their best to be more literate and to like stop using ChatGPT. But it's making it increasingly more harder for students because everything, all the student resources that are available to us have AI in it. You have like TikTok now, there's this new feature where you can have an AI generated video. So if you make a 5-minute video on TikTok as kind of like a blurb or whatever, you can have this extension of where AI is going to scan the video you had already made and kind of like a 30-second like extension to it, but it's actually ChatGPT. It's actually just AI just making something out. And like students, the people who claim to say they're trying to help us to cut back on AI and everything, it just sounds really ironic because the other resources that people are meant to tend to instead of ChatGPT all have AI in it. You have like typing documents or like things where you have or like apps where you want to use to write Word documents or whatever. They have like this AI chatbot, everything AI chatbot, everything this. And some pictures you can just post it on Instagram or something and Instagram flexes at AI because just one of course with AI, like everyone at least once a day, whether you attend to or you not intend to you use AI without actually knowing you're using AI because they just tried to like rewording in a different way to make it seem less AI-ish, but bottom line is, it's AI.
Yeah, that's really interesting to hear how that technology is using more and more AI or like making AI not like an optional part of the process would impact students in school. Like I can remember when Google search seemed to flip over and now suddenly the first thing that's being pushed is some kind of AI overview. And that must be quite something when that starts to happen with every tool while you're in high school. And maybe you're in this environment where, you know, you have thoughts or your teacher has thoughts or your school policy has thoughts, but the tool that everyone seems to be forced to use also has thoughts. We've talked about AI so far. We've talked about as well just like how everyone has a cell phone and you also like use them for things like Teams or collaborating on documents or just like things you would associate with day-to-day business. What about like outside of school technology in your lives? Maybe what about social media? What is that like for you and your peer group?
I would say that social media definitely does play a really major role in especially our age, because a lot of the times I feel like we can forget that a lot of the things that older generations had where they could go and spend time with their friends or hang out, we don't really have that anymore. Like, for example, the culture of like going to malls and being with your friends, hanging out there for the afternoon, that is really dying and it's dying really fast. Because I live in a smaller city, I usually hang out with my friends at the mall, but we can see every now and then, like every week, there's always a store closing. And I think that that kind of really pushes our generation to just go towards social media as a form of entertainment, because almost all other forms are just slowly being forgotten. And obviously, they're not really existing anymore. And especially things that, for example, parks, a lot of the times, even if you look at movies, older generations are always in the park. Nowadays, there's not really that culture anymore. And I think that it's really easy for people to just kind of blame like the youth and say, oh my gosh, you're always at home. Like you never go outside, you never do this. But I think it's a lot more difficult to kind of try to look at society and look at how societal rules and obviously technology have played a pretty pivotal role in blocking out anything that youth can do outside and just kind of in a way forcing everybody towards technology and towards social media as the only form of entertainment that's left. And even with things like, for example, music, a lot of my friends, they are slowly going back to nostalgic music like CDs. I, for example, have vinyls. And I think that as a generation, people are kind of starting to notice that they are longing for these things from the past. And they're trying to go back to that feeling of like physical media and even Polaroids, things like that. But I think it's definitely going to take a really long time to kind of find a middle ground where we're okay with technology advancing and innovative stuff happening, but we're also trying to keep it balanced so that people have that choice and they're not feeling like they're forced by an overwhelming amount of information and an overwhelming amount of opinions telling them what they should be doing and what they shouldn't be doing.
So on the one hand, you feel like there's this culture where people are just sort of spending more time on their phones. And maybe there's this idea that there are older people out there saying, oh, kids these days, they never go play in the park. And almost that same idea you were talking about with AI, where suddenly like it's everywhere. You feel like that is sort of the culture that youth are being pushed towards just by like broader trends in technology. And then youth are kind of being blamed for it as well. Is that kind of how you feel?
Yes, definitely. And it also kind of plays a little bit of a role just with overall like responsibility, especially with the use of AI in schools. I feel like a lot of youth can kind of relate to the fact that it gets overwhelming. And especially with, for example, if a student uses AI to create an essay and their teacher doesn't notice it, they might use that AI to get into a university or a college. And so the bar kind of goes up, but because there isn't exactly a set way for you to determine if that student actually wrote that amazing essay or if they used AI to write it, it kind of gets overwhelming. And so it also kind of plays into that idea that the childhood years are kind of being taken over by this kind of stress just because the bar is going so much higher because of the tools, not necessarily because the intelligence is going up or the literacy rates are going up, but just because this other option, this option C is available now, it kind of makes everybody feel like they need to go above and beyond to achieve one thing, even though a few years back, wouldn't have felt that stress, and they would have been able to achieve this one thing while they could keep a balance with between their personal life and their work life.
Princesa, what about you? How do you feel about the whole culture outside of school? Do you feel like you feel similar to Isis in the no one's going to the mall anymore, or you know, you could still go to the mall, but you might notice the stores are closing or people aren't going to the parks? How do you feel about maybe social media and its impact, or what do you notice about its impact on kind of the culture of folks in your peer group?
Okay, so I like to say, like, I see social media as kind of like a new religion, because it shapes how young people think, act, and see themselves every day without them even realizing. It feels like a new belief system because it influences values, opinions, and identity, right? So like your daily habits, your routines, most people, they check their phones the first thing they do when they wake up and the last thing they do before they go to bed. It becomes like really automatic. It feels like part of your daily life. It also has a way of like reinforcing a validation system, right? Like likes, comments, follows, like it feels like approval. And like a lot of like youths, a lot of teenagers, they crave this approval from social media. People start caring more about their online interactions more than their real life feedback. Like I was saying, people rarely go to parks, people rarely take a walk outside because everyone is so focused on that screen. Everyone is so focused on, I need to take the best aesthetic photo so that I get more likes, I get more follows than this other person. Like the algorithm, something about social media that I find really interesting is the algorithm. Like a lot of people notice that the algorithm, like everyone has a different algorithm and the app decides what you see most often. And it's just really crazy that everyone's algorithm is different because your data on your phone or your data on that social media app and like kind of like what's the word? It kind of like differs how you have your algorithm. So I might see something that Isis wouldn't see, and Isis might see something that I wouldn't see, not because we're both teenagers, we're both the same age, but because of the different algorithms and that. And like a really, really big thing that also has to do with approval, I feel, is trends and influence. Like no one really would buy matcha if it wasn't popular on TikTok. No one really would buy matcha if they didn't see their favorite influencer, if they didn't see the influencer with the most likes on TikTok drinking matcha. Things like matcha, crumble cookies, Birkin bags, all these name brands. People are not buying them because they like them, or people are not buying them because they feel like connected to them, or because, or for whatever reason, they're buying them for the name. They're buying because of the influence that social media has had. I feel like a lot of people are now starting to realize how big of an influence social media has, because like artists, people who have brands, really top brands, they now like pay social media influencers to do like PR reviews, because they see like we're in a digital world and the best way for you to get the sales in, or the best way for you to get the influence in, is social media. And the funny thing about social media is you don't have to be saying something that makes sense. You don't have to be saying something that is good, something that people see to be morally upright, to like trend. It can literally be anything. We have something that we call rage bait. It's basically people saying something to actually piss off the people who are watching for more engagement. So you get more comments. And once you get more comments, it gives like the algorithm a sign, okay, this is something that's trendy. And a lot more people start to see it on their FYP. So people do drastic things just to get like that 1 minute fame, or just to get that just to get the trending and everything. These trends affect the language, fashion, behavior, and like even some people's opinions. I remember I think it was last year when this the 90s look was trending, and then all of a sudden now everybody likes 90s, all of a sudden everybody likes them baggy jeans, all of a sudden everybody likes R&B. But it's really not what people want. It's just what they want people to see. Social media shows people what they want them to see, not really what happens behind the scenes. I just was saying that a lot of things might feel pressure to feel like they're not doing enough, or they're not making good choices. But at the end of the day, you just see someone who gets a nursing degree and they just post it on TikTok. You don't know how they got it. You don't know what happened behind the scenes. All of a sudden, a 23-year-old who still lives with her mom, or who still lives with her dad at home and doesn't have a job, is being, oh my gosh, I just feel that life. But you just forget, you're just seeing that 1 minute clip on TikTok and you have no history whatsoever of what's happening. Social media seems so polished and it tries to make everyone become perfect. So when you're not perfect enough, you start to feel like, why am I not like this other person? Why can't I be like this? Everyone is always trying to find the aesthetic thing. Everyone, we literally, if I go out with my friends, everyone's like literally trying to take picture of their bro, trying to take picture of the drink, because they want to have the aesthetic picture you're going to post on Instagram. And you can't necessarily blame them, because it's more of like a culture that everyone is doing. And a thing with the masses is, when everyone is doing something and you're not doing, and you kind of feel left out, So they want to participate in it. People follow online communities because they feel like they want to think the same way. And freedom of speech, right? Social media, everyone should have freedom of speech. And some people say something on TikTok, say something on social media, and it gets the wrong side of TikTok, the wrong side of Instagram, and they get bullied for their opinions. A lot of people get bullied for their opinions, they get hate threats, different things. And like, bullying is something that people have just seen as normal on social media because of people's weight, people's style, just anything whatsoever, people will find a reason to bully people. And the thing is, you're bullying someone who has taken their time to post something on TikTok, and you're behind the screen, you're saying hate things, people will be saying slurs, and you're saying really detrimental things to people's health and different things on social media. And it's really crazy from a different perspective to pose as someone who posts on social media. The emotional impact or the mental impact could totally be different. Like, content that is funny, shocking, or emotional, like I said, spreads a lot more faster. It can like influence people's beliefs, people's religion, people's feelings, people's facts. And I remember, because I'm part of the debate club, and we just have normal conversation, I'm just debating random things, and then people would just say something like, oh, I read this somewhere, yada, 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 and this is a fact. I'm like, where did you get that information from? They go, oh, I read it on this website. I'm like, you did not read this on the website. You saw this from TikTok. And miscommunication and misinformation is a really, 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 really big thing in social media, especially in a generation where people do not fact check. If they just see a verified account that just said something, it might not even be verified. It just says something like, oh, yada, 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 that happened, and everyone's running with it. Just basically how rumors and a lot of different things spread. Misinformation is one of the biggest things, and I feel like one of the like things that is affecting our generation very much with social media. We also have like the comparison effect, where people are comparing themselves to each other, people compare their lives to other people's lives. It can affect your confidence, your self-esteem. It can give you a minor complex. What else did I say?
Well, there's a lot there that you've touched on regarding social media. Are there parts of it that like you really like?
Yeah, I do like social media. Like, social media, ideally, from what I think social media was meant to be, I felt like social media was meant to be kind of like an entertainment thing. Like, originally, TikTok was made to be at a music app, was it? Yeah, I think TikTok was made to be a music app. And then you have, like, people who are, like, monetizing TikTok, who are making, like, videos off TikTok. And I try to stay off TikTok. I try to stay off social media. I try to stay off Instagram because it just sits with me pretty weird that I come to social media with the intent of like just like decompressing and just like watching something come down, and people are monetizing it. I'm someone who's really, really, really quick to block on TikTok because if you just do something and it's just really crazy and I feel like it's rage bait, I don't want to interact with the post because this they like to play on people's hearts, like make you angry, make you sad, things that will make you want to go into a comment section and fight someone. So just really quick to block it. I feel like social media gives people a platform to like communicate with other people. It gives you a platform for you to be able to talk to people all over the world. You can talk to someone who's in British Columbia. You can talk to someone who's in Japan. You can have relationships with people. The people crave relationships. They crave to talk to people. They crave friendships. And we don't have friendships physically because everyone's on their phone, and people want to find friendships on TikTok. People want to find friendships on Instagram, which is also now we have some AI apps where you have an AI chatbot who poses as your friend, who poses as your girlfriend, who poses as different things, because people just crave that intimacy or having a friend. That like it's kind of like an emotional intelligence thing, because people feel like they're not enough. They don't crave to have their own space. They don't crave to have time for themselves. They always want to have someone. They always want to have someone they can talk to. And when they cannot have a conversation with people their age, because a lot of teenagers are really judgmental, because, oh, you don't, why aren't you wearing the latest style? Why don't you like matcha? Why don't you do this? They result into talking to people on TikTok. And half the time, the people they're talking to are not even people their age, where you have like old people who are posing. You have, what do you call them, catfishers? Like catfishing, people are catfishing at someone else, and then you think you're talking to a celebrity on TikTok, and all of a sudden you're just talking to this random guy who lives in Arizona. It's crazy. Things just be happening.
People First Radio and Media are Vancouver Island Mental Health Society education and awareness programs.
You're listening to People First Radio. On today's show, we're hearing from Canadian youth about their experiences with tech and social media in their high school journeys. Isis Constantino and Princess Akanzua are taking part in the Youth Champions Project run by The Dais, a think tank out of Toronto Metropolitan University. That program works with students to cover how tech design impacts attention, behavior, and mental health. It also helps work with them to lead conversations with their peers on the same subjects. It sounds like there is so much for a young person, or really any person, to deal with when it comes to social media. And I know that the platforms are always evolving, or like a new one will come out and be popular. But I guess for your generation, these are things that have been around for like your entire lives. You can't remember a time before social media was a thing, or like the big thing. And now it seems like we're in this period where increasingly governments are getting really interested in doing something to regulate how social media works, specifically for young people. And I'm wondering, maybe Isis, what are your thoughts on this whole situation of the government wading in and trying to set out some rules on this is when and how young people are going to be able to use certain social media platforms?
Yeah. Okay. Let me see. Government talk is like my favorite. So, I feel like the first thing with the government trying to build these policies and trying to restrict a little bit of social media, I think it's important to take into consideration free speech and who is making these rules. In our heads up meeting a few days ago, we were actually talking a little bit about this and who makes these policies and why they make these policies. And I think it's important to take into consideration that it's all about profit, right? So if social media is giving profit to a specific organization, they're going to continue doing it and they're going to continue investing on it. They're not really going to think about the side effects that this might have to the people that are using it. And I think it can play a lot with the government and the policies that they put out. I think that obviously there should be policies. They should be, like, for instance, the policy that is being stated that nobody can use social media under 16, I believe. I think I understand why they want to put policies like those. But I think it's also important to take into consideration when people start restricting what other people can say online. And I think that this is really where you kind of get into a gray zone, because you can't really say this person has enough power to restrict what other people are saying online, because this is really where it gets really dangerous, right? This is where it can start getting into extreme views. For example, with the algorithm, a really big issue with it is that if you have a specific opinion and it leans more towards an extreme side, or even if you are a teenager and, you know, when you're a teen, your opinions are just forming, so you're obviously the most vulnerable group. The algorithm might start feeding you specific things and you're going to start interacting with it. But if it starts and it feeds you something that might be for rage bait, or it might actually be an extreme opinion, and you interact with it, even if you dislike it, you're going to receive more of it. And this is really where it creates a lot of hatred. And obviously, hatred is going to lead to violence, and this is something that everybody should really be trying to combat, and this is something that everybody should be trying to deal with. But the government obviously plays a role in that they should be trying to enforce policies that are going to stop this hatred from reaching people, right? They should be trying to stop these extremist opinions. But the problem really becomes when you kind of have to ask the question, who decides if an opinion is extreme or not? And especially if you think of an agenda, like, who is really to say that a government might be putting all of these policies out there to restrict extreme opinions online? But what if they're really trying to do that to kind of make everybody believe the same thing that they want these people to believe? So it's really a bit of a gray area. And I think that that's really the main reason as to why it's so difficult to decide on a good policy. Overall, I think that the best thing is really trying to have that kind of age limit, especially for example, for 16, I think that that's a pretty good age. If not, it should be a little bit higher, because I think that while you're in your teens, you're really trying to build your opinions. And I don't think that you need 200 different opinions in the same day.
Princess, what do you think as a young person? What would you want the government to know or to take into consideration if they were approaching this issue of what should we do about young people and social media?
I think what I would tell the government is the issue with social media and the issue with things on social media, it's not a one-size-fits-all type of thing. Like, it's going to vary per province, per state, per country. And I just think it's up to, like, each municipal government for each province to decide what best fits their region. Like, for example, if in Manitoba we have something like them saying, oh, if you're 16, you cannot use your phone or whatever, I feel like they should set a law, like something towards like what ISIS said, like 16 and upwards, like 16, 17-ish, maybe 18. If they set a law like that, that would be, I feel like would have a really, really good impact. But I feel like the first few months or years, that might be a little bit of an uproar. But I would do encourage them to take this seriously, because we have already acknowledged there's a lot of issues with social media, bullying, cyberbullying, and whatnot. And it's affecting the mental stability of the citizens of the country, the citizens of the province, citizens of wherever. And I do tell them to take this seriously. You know, it's a really serious issue, and people are not realizing that. I'm really just really sketchy about the government thing. I really don't know how to feel about it, because if we have, because whoever controls social media controls the information that everyone else sees. That's just where, like ISIS said, it's a little bit of a gray area. So I really don't know how to feel about that. Like, for example, inauguration dinner, where we had a lot of tech bros at the dinner. We had Elon Musk, Mark Zuckerberg, and the likes. And that was just pretty weird, you know, just having to see how big of an impact the relationships with the government can make.
You're tuned in to People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh. On today's program, we've been hearing from Isis Constantino and Princess Akenzua. The pair are high school students from Moncton and Winnipeg. They're taking part in the Youth Champions program at the Dais, which is a think tank at Toronto Metropolitan University. The program is all about leading conversations on digital wellness and healthy tech habits. For this next part of our conversation, we were joined by a third member of this year's Youth Champion cohort, Nico Proudlove, out of Saskatchewan. One thing that I think emerged both when you've been talking about social media and when you've been talking about generative AI technology is it almost feels like it's something that you use because you just can't escape, that there's a culture around it, and it's not like that you're looking at the pros and cons and deciding to use either social media or generative AI, but it's just something that is kind of pushed on you and you're kind of forced to navigate this world with it. Maybe, Nico, this is a good chance to get you to jump in. Do you think that's fair to say? Is that something that you're feeling when it comes to technology, that it's something that, like, it is just there and you have to adapt to it and there is no, like, option to sort of not use it?
Yes, 100%. I get that a lot. It's especially when I'm trying to research stuff for like assignments and stuff. Whenever I use Google now, it's always the like generated response or whatever, and you can never really escape it. But it's also, I find, when I'm trying to look for topics as well on websites or whatever, there's always these certain like websites that go around that are these like surrounding generative AI like assistant stuff. Like, I'll find, like, I'm trying to look for a math explanation in math or whatever, I always get these like, oh, I'm a math assistant who can help you with your math or whatever, and I'll generate a response if you take a picture of your work. And often, like, these are also often like put behind like paywalls and stuff too, so it's always this like you really can't escape it, like, at all.
If you say wanted to stop using social media or like Instagram or TikTok or whatever, is that something that you feel like would be as simple as just saying, okay, I'm going to delete the app from my phone and then move on with my life?
I don't think it would necessarily be that easy. I think that it is possible for you to distance yourself a little bit from social media, but I think ultimately technology itself, it serves as a tool, right? And even if right now it doesn't only serve as a tool, it was intended as a tool. So I think that you won't be able to ever fully escape it anymore. But I think that you can try to set a few boundaries within yourself. For instance, trying to keep your phone in a different room, or trying to set notifications, or trying not to open your phone the first time that you wake up. And I think that you can definitely do these things. But think, like, for example, in school, in my English class, which is a little bit ironic, all of our assignments were all online. We didn't write anything on paper. And I think that overall, you won't ever be able to fully escape it. You can set boundaries that you yourself know that you will try to follow, and it won't be easy. Because ultimately, algorithms, they are all designed to try to keep you hooked, right? They're not designed to keep you like mentally healthy, or keep you like let you have a little bit of boredom, right? Because boredom is really important, even though it doesn't feel super comfortable, but it's really important for creativity. But ultimately, they are built to keep you hooked and to keep you addicted. So it's obviously going to be a bit of a difficult journey for you to be able to distance yourself. But if you keep going and you try, you will be able to have at least a few boundaries in which you know that you won't cross, but you won't ever be able to, at least not anymore. You won't be able to completely stay away from social media and like not have a cell phone or a tablet or a laptop or anything like that. You will need to use it at least a little bit.
If you were to try and unpack a little bit of it and talk about how the fact that everyone has a smartphone these days, when they're in high school, like how do you view that in relation to maybe just like your health, whether that's your mental health or your physical health or whatever? Like, what is each of your views on that situation? How do you think of all of these different digital technologies, or like your relationship with your smart device and your own health?
I think that AI, or just technology itself, it has a pretty big influence in your mental health and your physical health. I think that especially that idea of trying to make everything easier, I think that it reaches a point where you shouldn't keep making it easier. I think that people should have a little bit of challenges. Healthy challenges, you know, it should be something that isn't incredibly difficult for them, but it should also be something that challenges them a little bit to kind of step out of their comfort zone. I think that that's how people grow. That's how people get more creative. They get more knowledgeable. And overall, it's just important to try to understand that everything shouldn't be automatic, right? Like, for example, the example that Princess used with the automatic scroll. There's really no need for that, right? I think that if society kind of tried to put the same funding or even the same attention to other issues in the world, like for example, poverty or like lack of food, things like these, it would be a lot more beneficial than if they kept trying to make our lives easier. It gets to a point where it doesn't need to be any easier. You need to really kind of understand that like your life wasn't made to be just like a stroll in the park, right? There is a comfortable amount of challenges that you're supposed to face, and that's good for you. And that obviously takes a toll in your creativity, in your mental health, in your ability to just sit with yourself, even your own identity. A lot of people nowadays, they don't even know who they are. That's why some of these questions that people ask in like interviews, like, oh, who are you? Like a lot of people, they don't really know how to express that anymore because one, they're being bombarded with a whole bunch of different opinions on who they should be and what category they should fit in. And I think one of the beautiful things about human nature is that you can't place a person in one single category. You can't place them in like, oh, the smart one, the creative one, the expressive, the extroverted, the introverted. You can't place someone in a specific box. And I think that that's really one of the things that social media tries to do. They try not only to simplify our lives, but to simplify our existence. And that's really something that we shouldn't be trying to do, because it's just incredibly complex. And when they actually try to do that, we achieve the opposite. We achieve everybody looking the same and thinking the same instead of diversity. And that's really what everybody should be striving for.
Nico, do you have any thoughts on this idea of, like, I don't know, it's a bit of a huge umbrella topic, but like technology, smartphones, and like the health of the youth?
I feel like, especially among like younger kids and younger generations right now, that it is definitely getting to like a weird point where AI is moving too fast and spreading across all these different platforms and devices and things, that it is like a thing you can't really escape or choose to escape. Like, one thing that I remember seeing a while back is that I'm a visual artist, and I sometimes post on Instagram and stuff. And I remember there was a lot of people complaining that because Instagram is owned by the same people as Facebook, they're implementing Meta AI. And one thing that you could not like disagree with on like terms and conditions stuff is that like we are going to use whatever images you upload, we are feeding it to our direct AI, and that there was like no way around it. And I feel like not only is it affecting like obviously like people and artists and stuff, like I've seen complaints online with people talking about like ChatGPT and taking stuff from the internet, but it's also taking like photos of like real people and real like kids and like stuff and who are on these platforms. It's just taking them without that permission, or like without having to take that permission. It's definitely a weird, like, I don't know. It's definitely weird and definitely harder, I feel like, for younger people to actually process what's happening. And it's happening so fast, so unbelievably fast, like just a couple years of all of this AI just spreading across everything. It's definitely, yeah.
If we're talking today about technology and youth and sort of digital wellness, is there anything else you think it's important to bring to the conversation? Or is there anything you would want, like, maybe adults who are interested in learning more or doing something on this topic? Is there anything that you would want that audience to know from your perspective?
I think that overall, the main thing that everybody should really try to keep into consideration is that it's not really an us versus them. It's not our generation versus previous generations. It's really, we're all victims of technology, and technology can serve as a tool. I'm not going to say that technology is this like really bad thing and, you know, we need to like completely get rid of it. No, I think that it really does help society. You know, it has a lot of benefits. It can help people with disabilities. It can help people connect to their friends. It can help people, like, it can help them establish new relationships. It can really have a good amount of benefit. It's just, we really need to try to keep it balanced. You know, everything should be balanced. If you drink too much water, you're going to die. If you drink too little, you're also going to die. So you should really kind of try to keep it in that middle ground. And it's important to realize that if someone that you know, if they are addicted to social media, or if you see that they are experiencing these like bad habits, or they are trying to compare themselves, or it's really just affecting their mental health or their physical health, I think it's important to try to first look at it with empathy instead of judgment. So you shouldn't try to judge them and be like, oh my gosh, I would have never done this. Like, you need to go outside, you're too weak. Like, no, you shouldn't try to do that, because one day that might be you too. So I think it's really easy to try to say like, oh, this has never happened to me, so this doesn't affect me. It's really everything else with the world. Like, just because it doesn't affect you today doesn't mean it won't affect you tomorrow. So I think that the main thing is that society should try to look at this issue with more empathy than judgment. And I think that that's really the only way that we'll be able to establish policies that will actually help everybody and will actually ensure that the human nature of it and that the humanity of it actually stays intact, instead of trying to, you know, transcribe it into a lot of code and just like one single category. That's really what I would take away from it.
Wait, if I could leave with one final thought, It would just be like we're living in a time where technology is no longer just something we use. It's something that is actively shaping how we think, learn, understand the world around us. To the young people, I would say be careful with your attention. Phone, social media, and AR tools are really powerful, but they should not replace your own thinking. It's easy to rely on shortcuts, but real learning comes from curiosity, effort, and working through challenges yourself. Don't just consume information. Learn how to question and understand it, and like think beyond it. To the education system, teachers and schools, I would say technology should not be only seen as a distraction that needs to be controlled. It is already part of students' life and will continue to be part of their future. Then only focus in on restrictions. We should also focus on education, teaching digital literacy, responsible use of AI, media awareness, and healthy habits around technology. The goal should be to guide students, not just to limit them, to the parents, adults, and caregivers. I would say the world for young people has always been about AI. Attention, identity, communication, and even learning now exist in digital spaces. So support today is not just about like limiting people's screen time. It's about understanding the environment we live in and helping your kids, your nephew, your nieces build a balance within them. To the politicians, to society and our leaders, I think I would say we're entering a world where information is no longer just shared. It is filtered, prioritized, and shaped by algorithms and artificial intelligence. That means influence is no longer just about who speaks the loudest, but about what is shown the most and what comes with responsibility, because controlling attention can influence how people see reality. So I think they really need to think really hard and long about how they're going to make the laws. So social media, AI, and technology are not separate from our lives. And yeah, just in the end, technology. In the end, technology would not decide who we are. We decide what technology is. So I just think the real question we should be asking ourselves is, at what point does like convenience become dependent, or are we already there, or are we close to getting there? So, yeah.
On today's program, you heard from Isis Constantino, Princess Akinzua, and Nico Proudlove. They're Canadian high schoolers from three different provinces. They're all taking part in the Youth Champions program at The Dais, which is a think tank out of Toronto Metropolitan University. The program is all about digital wellness and healthy tech habits. That's it for the show today. You've been listening to People First Radio. I'm Joe Pugh. Thank you so much for tuning in up and down Vancouver Island on CHLY, on Dig FM, on CFUV, or in St. John on Local 107.3, or on Vancouver Co-op Radio. Talk to you next week.
People First Radio is a community media project of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast partners.